Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. As always, I'm honored that you're joining us this week. So I hope every week as you listen to the show that, yes, change, oh my God, right? We all freak out. But I hope my guests and I provide some tangible information and tangible action steps for you to move your needle by applying that action or tip at the end after you listen. So again, I hope that the show provides value to you every week. Now, I also just started a membership community called the All-Star Community. I'd love for you to come and play with me. We meet twice a month. We do some really cool things. We share resources. We share each other and cross-pollinate and cross-network to help us all grow. The information is in the show notes, so please check it out. I would love for you to come and play with me. All right. My motivational quote today is by Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein says, "We can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created them. Think anew." And I love this quote because I feel like it embodies the essence of the podcast, right? Enlightenment of Change. But also being a change agent isn't always easy or glamorous, but it matters and provides new ideas and outcomes for, again, our successful future. Change is inevitable. Need I say more? COVID, right? The whole world shut down. And in business, I think a necessity to continue to grow and build a thriving future, we have to embrace change. So for larger businesses, I feel like change can be even more daunting and perhaps harder to implement because the directional change of a bigger organization is like, you know, changing or shifting the Titanic. So sometimes I do understand that it's a little bit harder. So today you are in for a huge treat. My guest is Carol Sanford. Now, Carol is a best-selling, award-winning business educator, summit producer, podcaster, and author. She is consistently recognized as a thought leader working side by side with Fortune 500 companies. Wait for it. Like Google, DuPont, Intel, P&G, and seventh generation and new economy. And she also works with new economy executives in designing and leading systematic business change and design. Now, through her university and in-house educational offerings, global speaking platforms, best-selling multi-award winning books, and development work, Carol works with executive leaders who see the possibility to change the nature of work through developing people and work systems that ignite motivation everywhere. So as you can see, everybody needs Carol in their life. So Carol, thank you so much for being on.
Well, Connie, thank you for that. And I have to tell you, I am completely startled by the quote you picked. It fundamentally underlies everything I do. Plus, I know what he meant by it because I studied with his students who he answered the question, what do you mean when you say don't use the old way of thinking to create the new? So if you want to talk about that, I will share that story with you.
Isn't that funny, Carol? And now everybody listening, Carol and I did not have a conversation. Right. I picked the quotes on my own. I don't ask for input from my guests. It's just too much work for them. So, right. And why? See, isn't that interesting? So, yes. Well, look, before we do that, I'm curious, how did you learn the method that you use? And maybe that incorporates the story of the quote from Albert Einstein.
Well, I am a lifelong creator of understanding. I think I started when I was very, very young with my grandfather, who was part Mohawk. And so he came up with indigenous cultures, and I got to be a part of that. So I learned premises, which let me design my own method. I'm not borrowing anyone's method, but the premises. I studied at UC Berkeley under Thomas Kuhn, who wrote The Structure of the Scientific Revolution about paradigm shifts. And that's also where I met the students, Edward Teller and a few other professors who were at Berkeley I studied with, who had been at Princeton with Einstein when he was teaching. I also worked with David Bohm's students. Again, he had been at Berkeley before I was there. I was there at a magical time that I got to intersect with all these people. And then as I got older, there were many other teachers, but I got particularly concerned about behaviorism early because I was a subject of the testing that was graded to be very unintelligent on a, what do they call it, mentally retarded level. So early, I started looking at where in the world did the idea of behavior modification come from and what's its damage. All of that was woven together. And by the time I was 30, I met a man who had been at Procter & Gamble and founded many of the great ideas that made it such a perfect sales and marketing organization, right? But also a great change agent. He helped me understand and make sense of a lot of that. And I miss the Socrates part and Pythagoras. He had done a lot of work there. So it was a weaving, but they were all based on the same principles that humans are incomplete and you need to grow them. They need to grow themselves. And in order to be able to really make a difference, and that we don't have infrastructure or systems that grow people, we have people who train them and who reward them, but not who develop their capacity. So that's the essence of my work, is really how it is you do this development of human beings in a system in a way that they can make the difference that the system wants to have, not our human projections. That's a long story, but maybe it gives you a flavor.
It's brilliant. And here's the thing, Carol, two comments. One, that you kind of you've taken all of this information from the lifetime and created your model, right? So we take a little bit from this, a little bit from that. I do the same thing. I know a lot of vendors out there that teach sales or coach sales and coaching and stuff like that. They bought a model or they got trained in a program, and my stuff is all my stuff. It's, you know, it's 40 years of experience in sales and how I know I've learned to navigate and shift. Plus, you know, I've probably have trained 25, 30,000 people. So right. When you see that type of result response, right, now you have tangible meat of what actually works. And the second thing I wanted to comment on is behavioral change, right? That's what the show is about. For us to change anything, we have to create new habits. We have to change behavior. And oh, by the way, that is not an easy thing to do. So if like your teaching, right, is very tangible, I think like mine, that people go, oh, that's what that means. Or, oh, that's the next step I should take. That's how we change behavior. It's, you know, everybody, and at the end, you'll see, I'll say this. And I know everybody that listens to my show is like, yeah, Connie, we know. Information is a beautiful thing, but if we do nothing with that information and don't create action from it or a plan from it, or even just a little baby step from it, it's information. It's not really helping me change my world. Or if I'm in service to someone else, like you and I are, we're not helping our clients if we just take the information and don't do anything with it. So when we talk about changing behavior, it's not an easy thing to do, but it's so important to remain relevant. And you and I were chatting about staying relevant, right, you know, before we started recording. So yeah, it's brilliant what you're doing, and it's needed. Yeah.
I would say slightly differently what I'm doing, although I could see where you were going. I start with thinking, not with behavior. And the reason is the mind actually holds a paradigm, an image out of which it creates its current behavior. And you can't always, there are some very, very simple things you can change your behavior, get a new habit, or a new habit. But the way we create how we think the world works, it's so locked in, we can't see it. One of the things I'd learned from Thomas Kuhn was that paradigms are shaping our entire country, our culture, our planet. And I asked him, well, how in the world do we help people see that? That, I mean, it was shocking to me to think there wasn't a truth that somehow we eventually all would get to. And he said, well, maybe that's true, but mostly what's true is that over decades, we change what we can see. We actually change what we can conceive of. And we change how we think the world works. And we do it in large swaths of people, like scientists, all of a sudden don't believe, who didn't believe in germ theory, believe in it. And who didn't believe that the sun, Earth was the center of the universe, or the sun was, I thought that Earth was, switch. And he said, it'll happen in a few hundred years. And so I said, well, that's all interesting, right? Well, what do I do with that as a person? He said, learn to see your own paradigms, learn to change your own paradigms, and educate other people on how to do that. So I developed a process by which people can come to see it and then look at what's a result of that in your behavior. If you change this way of seeing the world, you would see something different that's possible. And so my framework, I call it, so it's, I don't call it a model. There's a reason for it, because models are a particular paradigm, like there's an answer and you follow the template. Yes. A framework is you have to figure it out every time in the moment. So if there's one thing I'd love for people to play with today, leaving here, you said, you know, something to play with, it is, wow, what is it that I'm seeing that's locking me in to not being able to find a new way to view it, a new way to change me? What do I believe about myself? What do I believe about other people? What do I believe about how the world works? And to do that, it's a daily exercise. I have a journal and I'm constantly writing, or I met somebody and I didn't like them. Why? And I eventually can discover something in me. And that's the work I want to be doing. So I think that's in the ballpark.
Yeah, it's peeling back our own onion. And it does. It takes time, right? Not a lot of time, but you have to spend time doing it. The word I use, you have to be curious. So, yeah. And I am a curious person, but like your example, it's so funny you use that. When I meet someone, I usually like, I would say 90% of people I meet, I connect with, and I love people, right? That's why I do sales, right? Because I love talking to people. But when I meet someone that rubs me the wrong way, I do, I reflect and I think, what was it that, because it's a mirror. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Mirrors. So what didn't I like in them? Is that something I don't like in me? And you just, you know, it's that little self-reflection. And again, you don't have to spend a ton of time, but you have to have that curiosity to say, whoa, why didn't I like that person? Or why didn't I connect with them? What am I seeing in myself that maybe I need to work on, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Can you give us some examples or proof of how, and the, this idea of that paradigm shift? And I love that because I see what you're saying and what I was saying, that the thinking comes first. Yeah. I have to identify, then I can change the behavior. So I get that connection of what you said. So can you give us some proof of how that works and how it, you give us some examples in your career working with people?
So let me tell you what the four paradigms are I give people to play with. They may create their own, but it took me a few decades. So it gives you something to work with. I believe that the primary paradigm that was ancient was what I call extract value. Get something from me. I'm the king. I'm the queen. I'm the pope. I'm the head of the company. And then other people inside the company did the same thing. That we did that eventually to Earth also, strip the Earth of minerals and so forth. Companies that I work with, I get them to look at these four. And the first one is moving from the extract paradigm idea to what I call a rest disorder. So when I was in my 60s or not, somewhere earlier than that, I began to see how I was worried about the damage the people did, the companies did. And I wanted everything to be less harmful, do less harm. And there became communities, groups that formed around it, sustainability, circular, all those things. But once I never had to say to a company, you're down here on this lower paradigm. I said, here's some paradigms just to set yourself, look at your behavior, look at what you've done. And many of them would say, my goodness, we need to do less of that bad stuff. After a while, I could show them the third one and say, this is about not just doing less bad, but doing good. That's like the humanist paradigm. And people would say, oh, yeah, I don't want to just be less bad. I used to always tease them and say, That's a little like beating your children less, right? To do less bad. What you want to do is do good. And so they think, yeah, I'd play with my kids, be there more, do more for my customers. And so we'd look at, well, what activities do you have that are still in the extract value, or you've now arrested disorder, and where do you want to do good? And they would change themselves. And I'll give you an example here in a second of how we did this with DuPont. Then the fourth level, I said, but this is where we need to be. I call it living systems or regeneration, how life really works that we need to all participate in. And companies could assess themselves. Where were they on any activity? So we did this with DuPont Corporation. Well, I've done it with many companies, but this one, there are two, DuPont and Colgate, which are radical shifts. DuPont began to see then in their mining operations that because they were literally extracting, taking titanium and oil out of the ground, that they were really causing harm. And they started by trying to figure out how to do less harm and then good. And once we helped them look at how titanium actually worked, and I'm not going to explain that, I promise, not that it could, but they realized that they could do mining in a way that used very, very, very little of extraction. They had been having to take down 90% of a mountain to get the amount of ore they needed to make titanium. Now, you could say, well, quit using it, but it's in food, it's in makeup, it's in paint, it's what makes things opaque. So the team, we had a core team, all levels of the company said, what if we could invent a way to make titanium dioxide out of very low grade ore? We didn't have to get so much where we could extract the high grade. We could use really low grade. And that process, they invented a whole new formulaic product, and they were able to reduce the harm as well as do create healthier communities. This was mostly in deep Pacific Australia. And just observing that, I didn't say, you bad guys, you're down here and you're here. All I do is, I'm an educator. You read that at the beginning. I'm not a consultant. I don't say, give advice. I teach people how to think. And when they can think and see it, they change their behavior. We did the same thing in South Africa, where we were moving from Black Africans making up less than 3% of the top of the corporation to making up 95%. And that was required by law, but in most companies, it was tearing them apart, creating violence. Instead, we educated people about how you could do that and how we can make it work and never lay off anyone, never demote anyone, never reduce anyone's pay. Everyone got to participate in a way we had no hierarchies. And that process that came from them doing self-assessment through education of these paradigms and a few hundred other kind of things. But that's an example of how if we examine ourselves, our thinking using a framework that's more whole rather than a set of models that say do this, have this kind of inclusion, this kind of diversity. We never did diversity and inclusion, and yet the entire company let go of all the racist structuring they had. Yeah. I worked with them to redesign how the company worked, how sales worked, how product design worked, how decision-making worked, all of an education of how to think.
And it's interesting. So here's a question for you. Do you find, because you've been, you know, playing in this space for some time,
yeah,
have you found that thought leadership is getting better because we have all of this information at our fingertips, Google, right, where we could Google anything? Are you finding that we're less, more, or it's the same, humans are humans?
I think there is the humans are humans part, and all of them need education, but I don't track whether we're getting everyone there. I track whether we're getting something like 5 to 10% of all companies. Because once you get a certain percentage inside a company or among an industry, a whole industry will shift. There has been so much change in consumer products because seventh generation proved that you could do products that were ecologically sound, healthy for people, have better margins, which of course you understand that as a salesperson, and therefore better overall revenues. We proved you could get 35 to 65% growth in revenue per annum by working this way. And once you did that, you all of a sudden had people's attention. So I don't know whether the whole universe is shifting, but I'm going industry by industry and talking with them, not about just their company like P&G, which was one of the also big shifters. But Unilever started moving. They bought Seventh Generation, which I'd worked with for a long time, and then were able to implement more there. So I'm kind of answering your question in a roundabout way. Because I moved them to quit thinking about leaders and think about leadership, and that 100% of the people in the company, like Isaac Bashiel in South Africa, was a detergent tower operator who had never been to a public school, which was forbidden in his life, Black African. His ability to create an enormous number of small businesses that were related to Colgate's products in the townships was unbelievable. Now that's thought leadership. Absolutely. But we had set it up so 100% of the people inside Colgate South Africa were generating these kind of ideas. And they were being supported by a new infrastructure that wasn't about competing for position, but competing for changing the lives of people who were their customers. That's a whole different evaluation system, right? Once you had done that, you had so much thought leadership. It had nothing to do with top or bottom. It was, we had people who became members of township councils that Mandela set up, who were also, on an assembly line. And it normally would thought, well, thought leadership comes from highly educated, top of the, no, it comes from people who care and connecting them to the world they really want to change. So you will, I heard me say this, let me say it again. It sounds like chaos when I describe people, how could you do that? But the problem is they're using the current way of seeing how you structure a business. And I do systemic. You said systematic, and the word really is systemic, but you can't tell the difference when you're reading in a hurry because you have to do it everywhere. And because of that way we grew revenues hand over fist because we had 3,000 people in the company inventing the ideas like Isaac did.
And that's, I think, the shift, right, is to the model that they're working from, right, reevaluate it, but it allows space for people to share their innovative ideas or their perspective because they're the end, maybe not the end user, but they're contributing to the end user. So you have when you're creating something, the mining is one piece of it, but then what is the product development? So you have different people in that process that could come forward and say, hey, I had a thought. What if we did this instead of that? I think it'll save the environment, or I think it'll serve our clients, or it'll serve the company that we can do this and increase our margins because the cost, right, is a little bit less. So as soon as you open it up and allow people to voice their thoughts in a thoughtful way, right, not just complain, but say, hey, I had a thought. Can we try? And here's some of the research I've done, or this is what I've seen, and this is the tests I've done. I think you get a bigger, broader perspective. But at the top, you have to, meaning the executives, have to be open to listening to all the employees. So there does have to be a little bit of an internal cultural change from what you're describing. Did I understand that correct, Carol?
No. That's the old model. And that's true. What you're talking about in the current business design, we had no suggestion box. Isaac came up with the idea. He went to the capital committee because 100% of the people were required to come up with a specific change they wanted to make to a customer. Oh. They negotiated with them. They designed it. They carried it out. They evaluated. They pulled together the team. They did their own evaluation. There was no one they went to. The only person, only place they went to is they were part of what we call market field teams, where you have a group of people from all levels, all mixes, who are studying particular buyer nodes. you think of them more as niches and categories. We call buyer notes, which were based on the values of the kind of customer. So Isaac actually went to and held a meeting, which over 100 women attended, and found out what they wanted to do for oral health. Oral health is what he decided to improve. He didn't have to suggest it. The research was done with the market field team. So maybe you can begin to feel this is radically different. There's no top. There's no external evaluation. And that's what we did, is we shook loose hierarchies. We didn't get rid of people. They became resources to people. Absolutely. Like Isaac. So it is a culture shift, but it's more earthquake than even the one you were describing. And even if people did what you were describing, that'd be a huge improvement, but it won't get the 35 to 65% revenue growth per annum. And it won't transform a country, which is what we did. And we did the same thing in part of Europe and Greece, which was kind of wagging the tail of the whole country. We did it in parts of the U.S. with Kingsford Charcoal, where people had an eighth grade education. And all of these case stories are in all of my books in some depth. I don't want to say you're wrong about what you said. It's just not what we did. We did something even more radical than is seen anywhere else.
And here's the thing, Carol, I think that we're at a time where radical change is definitely needed. And let me ask you this question. Are you seeing that more people are open to this idea and your framework than they were in the past, because we're ready for radical change now?
Yes. And let me tell you how that spreads, because that's really the important part of your question.
Yeah.
All of the companies I work with are by referral from other companies. Mm-hmm. So Jeffrey Hollander of Seventh Generation, who's the founder and now a board member for Unilever, who bought him, I believe probably at least 50% of my current and recent clients came from him way back. Not he recommended all of them, but he recommended 10 who recommended 10 who recommended 10.
Yeah.
And that's the most powerful way to spread, because Jeffrey and others, and you can see that they write stories in Harvard Business Review about our work, and they will say this, what I did with Carol, and it's not about me, it's about something I can see works that we can develop their capability, but that they'll say, working with Carol changed my life and it changed my business, because I no longer see the world paradigm shift, right? I no longer see the world I did before we did this work. It changed people who work for him, who Kingsford Charcoal is another one that we did such a radical change. And people left there and went to become CEOs and younger leaders of other places. They did the work. And those who couldn't find a way to keep doing felt crushed, because they never wanted to work a way again that was traditional. Bosses delegating, asking for participation, becoming the incentivized and rewarded person. They didn't ever want to work that way again. So yes, it is spreading. I think it's picking up some momentum. I can tell that people are searching, because they're copying or borrowing pieces of what we do. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, you can't do pieces. You can't take this idea of what I call promises beyond ableness, which Isaac Bashiel did, and all the other people. You have to do the whole shebang. You have to do the full education. I was there, and in DuPont and others, for a week, a month. We were working on changing how they thought, how they worked with thinking, and how they changed the culture as a result, and how they changed decision making, and then how they redesigned work over a series of years. So it's a big deal, but once it starts moving, you can't stop it.
Yeah, it's the tipping point idea, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. And in my example, my little intro, it's hard to shift the Titanic, right? My example.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying, right?
Shift, I do. Yeah.
You can't, you know, on a little speedboat, you turn the wheel and you're on a dime. That's not the case for the bigger organization. So if they can work on this, it does take a lot of time. But here's the reality. If you can give 35 to 65% growth annually, who doesn't want to do this, right?
Exactly.
I mean, proof is in the pudding. Like, that's the result. And it's, oh, by the way, it's not going to happen in the first month because you have to give people, we all learn differently. And I love how you keep using the word educate, because that's where people go, oh, that's how it affects me. Or, oh, that's how I can implement my piece of the puzzle, whatever that might be within the organization. Now they have an application, but that doesn't happen overnight. So I'm glad you mentioned that. But here's the deal, 35 to 65% yeah. increase. And you have the actual case studies where that has happened with these bigger organizations.
Yeah,
the proof is in the pudding. Give me the results. Sign me up every time. So thank you for that. We're out of time, Carol, but I do want to share. I want to share you. I want to share your email and your website so people can find you and really learn. I mean, I feel like we hit literally the tippy tip of the iceberg. There's so much more depth to what you offer. So please, if you have a question specific for Carol, you can email her at carol@carolsanford.com. Go to her website, which is carolsanford.com. And just briefly, I'm going to put the link for your free gift. Can you share briefly what the free gift will be?
Yeah, everything I do works for small companies too. And there are many stories, and I put them together. The five errors of entrepreneurship, because I'm like you, I now have younger and younger people coming. And people who want to splinter off from the big company, it's on that page. You just say, you've joined my newsletter and you get it in an automatic download.
Beautiful. So I will put that link, guys, in a backlink it so you could click it and you can join the newsletter and follow Carol and all the cool things she's doing. Additionally, go check out her website. You never know what you'll find because she's got a ton of resources there as well that might help you like today, like right here, right now. So again, check that out, carolsanford.com. Carol, a delight to have you, a delight meeting you. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your just wealth of wisdom and that change is possible, right? That's the essence of the show as well. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Just lovely meeting you.
Thank you. Lovely meeting you. And the story about what Einstein meant on your quote can also be found in any of my books because I tell it over and over.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Repetition is good. That's how we learn, right, Carol? Repetition. It's how the human brain works, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. A pleasure. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that no matter what change you're facing, that my guests and I, we really do have you. And I hope some of our thoughts and ideas and strategies and tips and resources like the websites and emails and free gifts that we provide, I really hope it helps you on your quest or your journey of change. And I hope we make it just a smidge easier for you. Life could be hard. So if we have these tips and tools and strategies, hopefully it just gives you a little bit of relief. Change is here. Change is always here. I hope that we can help you navigate through that. Thank you for tuning in to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Again, I'm your host, Connie Whitman. I am honored to have you here, and I so enjoy that you join us weekly to hear our tips and ideas. Again, I wish you an inspired week filled with a lot of fun and love. Have a great one, everybody. Thanks. Check that out, carolsanford.com. Carol, a delight to have you, a delight meeting you. Thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your just wealth of wisdom and that change is possible, right? That's the essence of the show as well. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us. Just lovely meeting you.
Thank you. Lovely meeting you. And the story about what Einstein meant on your quote can also be found in any of my books because I tell it over and over.
Wonderful. Yes. Right. Yeah. Repetition is good. That's how we learn, right, Carol? Repetition. It's how the human brain works, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, a pleasure. And I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that no matter what change you're facing, that my guests and I, we really do have you. And I hope some of our thoughts and ideas and strategies and tips and resources, like the websites and emails and free gifts that we provide, I really hope it helps you on your quest or your journey of change. And I hope we make it just a smidge easier for you. Life could be hard. So if we have these tips and tools and strategies, hopefully it just gives you a little bit of relief. Change is here. Change is always here. I hope that we can help you navigate through that. Thank you for tuning in to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. Again, I'm your host, Connie Whitman. I am honored to have you here, and I so enjoy that you join us weekly to hear our tips and ideas. Again, I wish you an inspired week filled with a lot of fun and love. Have a great one, everybody. Thanks.